right, we are recording. Chandler, you from the...
I'm recording currently from the beautiful island of Nantucket.
I was going to say the golden island of Nantucket. Not really sure why it's golden, but...
It's actually quite green.
Well, I wasn't sure if Nantucket was an island or not, so I'm glad to confirm that indeed it is.
Indeed it is an island. It is located, it's an island right next to Martha's Vineyard, which is also an island. These are things I didn't know. I thought they were all connected to larger bodies of land.
Correct. I also assumed the same thing. So does this mean when people go to their ritzy places on Martha's Vineyard or in Nantucket, they have to reach that place by either ship or plane?
Yeah, ferry or plane.
Or plane.
Did you see who's also in... Wait, hold on. First of all, I want to ask you, do you know what state Nantucket's in?
Massachusetts.
Okay. Just wasn't sure if you were going to know that.
It was a wild guess. So I'm glad I've seen enough, you know, Hollister, Abercrombie, maybe little Brandy Melville shirts that say Nantucket, Massachusetts on them. Yeah. That's really where my my geographical education comes from, brands targeted towards eighth graders.
I mean, and that's what everybody is wearing here. It's actually really wild. Like everyone's either in like Doan, Love Shack Fancy, or like Brandy Melville. It's crazy.
That's so funny. Yeah,
it's really lovely.
Just like a lot of people in one size fits all, basically only fits 18-year-olds clothing.
Yeah, I mean, just basically my main takeaway from the fashion here is just that everyone is richer than me, like by like heaps.
Right, right. They all can afford to drop $400 on a dress that is actually just like barely even flattering and makes them look like are one of Joseph Smith's wives.
I've seen teen girls, like throngs of teen girls in nicer clothes than I've ever owned.
What a harsh reality to confront. I mean, that's the thing is like we would have loved to have grown up East Coast wealthy, private schools, boarding schools, you know, Prince William potentially at our schools. This didn't happen. This wasn't our reality. We were public school hoes.
We were like, it's just interesting the difference between like, you know, Orange County wealth, which I wouldn't even say that we had like, you know, the package, the Orange County total picture of wealth, but like,
right.
I mean, every single person here is rich. I mean, there was a baby who passed me yesterday in a gorgeous stroller and I'm like, that baby is richer than me.
The baby has more net worth than you for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That and baby like, will live a much nicer life than you.
There's just something about people who are extremely wealthy and the way that they dress head to toe that just feels different. Like, there's an air of wealth in their bracelets, in their makeup.
Right. There's no skimping, you know. There's like a Cartier stack paired with an $18 Brandy Melville casual crop tee.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a pair of $700 sneakers that are meant to look like they're extremely distressed.
Right. I mean, we were seated next to a family at brunch yesterday who, you know, every single person was dressed impeccably. It was like a grandma and grandpa and then a, you know, mother and I would presume would be her husband, but they were seated on opposite sides of the table and barely spoke to each other. And then the kids were just like dressed impeccably. I mean, they were darling and they were playing with like these little horses on the table. I mean, it's the most amazing people watching of my entire life.
There's something about wealthy families that just makes my soul feel warm and cozy. Like this family has an easy life.
Right.
This family, like they don't feel stressed. When the children start crying, the children are removed. This reminds me of one of my philosophies. Can I tell you one of my philosophies?
Sure.
I would like to go back to the days of governesses. Okay. Because for me, like if I was to have a large brood, I would love to have it structured in a way where the children were brought to me in the mornings, freshly groomed,
bathed,
you know, bathed, fed, perfumed, perhaps fully rested, just a little gleam in their eyes. You know, they play at my feet as I sip tea and talk about the day with my fellow ladies. And then the second they're ornery or in some way displeasing, a very comely and groomed other person slash woman runs in to usher them out.
They're extricated at the slightest, you know, discomfort.
That's the kind of mothering I would like to see embraced.
Is your fourth wave of feminism that you're interested in, you know, championing?
I just think let's go back to the times of Downton Abbey. That would be my ideal, you know?
Definitely.
Anyway, when you see a mother and she looks well rested and like she's not schlepping, it just makes you feel like
I mean,
it makes you feel good inside.
It was truly a sight to see. I mean, it just, it's just nothing quite like being rich. I don't think I've seen an old car since I've been here. I haven't, the weather is also perfect. Okay. All the rich notes about being in Nantucket are amazing, but the general topography is stunning. Like, we're at this cabin-esque like house that's all tucked away. Like, there's not a house for like a while. And I mean, there's like a roof on the very top of the house that you can only get to by like a ladder. And then you like look at the stars at night. I mean, it's stunning.
Right, right. It's like another ecosphere where everything is perfectly manicured. Right.
It's really similar to like the vibe of The Affair.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, it's like one of my favorite vibes. Oh my gosh. Well,
I mean, it's like, it's not like, it doesn't feel tropical. It feels like an East Coast island, which is so interesting. And the temperature is perfect. It's like not hot. It's just like slightly windy. It's lovely.
The thing about having a home there too, that's super flex, is that the weather's basically only good for 3 months out of the year. Otherwise, it's basically too cold. Like, it's just not warm. It's like snowy, I feel like, and just frigid. It's like more Maine vibes. I could be getting this totally wrong, but I do think that it's like a flex. Like, oh no, our vacation home is barely even usable.
Right.
But it's worth more than the house you'll ever own.
I'm going to send you two photos right now. Are you ready?
Yeah, please.
Two photos to just kind of depict what type of life that I'm living. Maybe I'm going to send you three.
I really love this new reality for you.
I know. Oop.
Stop it. This is gorgeous.
So this is like, and I'm going to show you the rooftop that
were. Okay, this is you were complaining about the ticket cost of staying in this home. This is worth it, Chandler.
Well, I wasn't like, and honestly, I was just not prepared, frankly, to spend a lot of money because I've spent a lot of money this summer. Now it's 100% worth it. I would have paid more, frankly. It's so nice.
It's actually sad that you don't have a decent camera to take pictures with.
What do you mean? Like you don't have DSLR?
Like a film camera could capture all of this so beautifully.
Right. I should go pick it like a disposable. That would be pretty. But I like that picture I just sent you of Ben, like working from the roof this morning. The house is just like, it's stunning. And then we can just have ocean on all sides.
Oh, well, you need to post more about this on Pop Apologist, you know?
I should
lifestyle porn out there.
Honestly, I should be posting more on Pop Apologist. I actually had to work a little bit this weekend, which just kind of killed the vibe. Yeah. I can't talk about it. I'm honestly grieving. I made a huge mistake by not taking this entire week off.
And really?
I'm paying for it. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's
all right. Also, but
really not okay.
I need to actually give my manager a shout out. I don't know if he's going to listen to this episode. My manager listens to the podcast somewhat regularly, he told me. I think I told
Incredible.
You this. Yeah, last week. But just, you know, need to give JL a little shout out. If you listen. If you don't listen, I would actually be grateful for that.
Yeah. JL, thank you for listening and thank you for keeping Chandler employed. Truly doing the Lord's work. Mm-hmm. Because let's just say we're not even an inch down the road to getting this podcast to support this bitch.
Right,
so
right.
It's going to be – she needs that job for a long time. Potentially forever. Basically forever.
Most likely.
Yeah. Oh, it's so dark. Someone asked me the other day, they're like, so what's your goal with the podcast? I'm like, gosh, I don't even know anymore.
It doesn't
seem like we're getting there.
I mean, I don't know. Make it another 5 to 6 years and then maybe see a dime.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Speaking of – we have to do this, Chandler. We have to have a moment of thirst in every episode because truly, we will not grow without it. So I'm forcing it upon us. I know you don't like to seem thirsty, but you guys, if you love Pop Apologists, if you like listening to two, you know, nouveau riche bitches talk about the life they'd like to have and aspire to, but don't currently live, if you like wasting your life listening to this podcast and you want it to continue.
Or if you just think we're hot.
Yeah, which that's not the case. That's not happening. I mean, that's seriously wishful thinking. I don't know what was in your breakfast this morning. Chandler's on drugs. But if you want this podcast to continue, please share it. We need more listeners. That's really the name of the game. We need more people who listen to the podcast. So share it on your stories. Tell people to listen. Tell people you love it. Tell people it's the best thing that's ever happened to you. Tell people it saved your life. Lie if you have to.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, honestly.
Just share the pod.
Share the pod. No one has stopped me in Nantucket and asked me if I'm Chandler from Pop Apologist, which I think is just showing how little we're growing.
Yeah, there's that. There's also the fact that we're just not really growing anymore. So there's also just that when we look at the stats. So anyway, You guys, it's up to you. If you want us to stay on the air, please, please share. I can just see, I can just hear people being like, I actually don't really care.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, totally. Okay, well, speaking of work, yep. You and I both were very interested in following the Simone Biles story. And we watched the documentary Athlete A.
Correct.
How good was that documentary?
It was insane. So I work on obviously West Coast hours on East Coast time. So I usually have, like, the mornings are a little bit more free for me. So I watched it one morning before work, and I had a friend staying with me, and both of us could not, like, he tried to do some work and then he just kept, like, coming back over to sit on the couch and watch it. Like, it was so riveting.
And that's the thing, like, a truly riveting documentary. It made me realize, like, wow, this has been sitting on Netflix this whole time. Like, it is captivating.
I know.
So good. Okay, so it tells the story of Larry Nassar, which obviously everyone knows the story, but I hadn't ever really done the research or heard about. So it's super, super fascinating. And I think, like, one of the things that's the most riveting for me is actually learning about, like, Olympics, like, basically the bureaucracy and the institutions that the Olympic athletes essentially enrich. Like, what I realized, I had this epiphany, because we always think of Olympic athletes, I feel like, in terms of, like, their glory. But really, these athletes are just, like, transitory, temporary, disposable performers,
right,
who are essentially replaced,
right,
the second they stop performing and creating results for the institution. And really, the people who benefit, it seems like, are the lifelong coaches, the lifelong administrators and bureaucrats and executives of these institutions, who are essentially enriched for life. Like, it interviews all of these past performers, these, you know, like, we only, most people, lay people, they only really hear about the gold medalists.
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't become a household name unless you're, like,
unless you are, like a Simone Biles, who is, like, consistently awarded and, like, you know, or invents a new move or something like that. Like, I had never heard
Michael
of half
Phelps
of these.
Or Serena Williams.
I'd never heard of half of these gymnasts. Olympic gymnasts.
I had not heard of any of them. And it was like, it was so interesting, because you realize, like, wow, these people, they sacrifice their entire youth. They have a totally different childhood because they just train intensely. They damage their bodies. They just completely sacrifice themselves for this competition.
They pay to do this also.
This career. Yeah. And then at the end of it, a lot of them, like, you're kind of like, man, it doesn't seem like they really, like, this set them up in any way for, like, a life of ease or, like, even financial success. It was actually very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's just, like, straight up the, like, just the money side of things. We aren't even getting into the abuse that happens. Like, this is just, like, the reality of the sport.
Right, exactly. Which I just thought was, like, you know, I think the story of Larry Nassar's abuse has been well documented. And I think that it doesn't bear repeating necessarily on this podcast.
Yeah.
However, I think that absolutely it's a story you haven't paid attention to. You should watch this documentary, because it's really fascinating and really horrible.
I was just going to say, so for me, a really interesting part of the entire documentary was learning more about the, like, history of gymnastics and how it became this thing that was featuring very, very young girls.
Right.
Where it used to be more adults. And now
adult women.
Adult women. And now it's, like, teenage, if not, like, you know, prepubescent girls.
Right, right. Or, like,
and they're smaller
girls
and
13-year-olds.
Right, exactly.
And that was also shocking to me too, is there was such an – so, like, there was this – basically this sea change, because the Russians started dominating gymnastics in the 70s, and they had this extremely strict style of training, and their stars were extremely young, like 14, 15. And so the Americans learned, like, okay, that's what's working. We're going to adopt that similar mentality.
I mean, and then we literally had coaches from Russia.
Right. Yeah. The top coaches from Russia, I think, were they hired by USA Gymnastics?
I think they used the word, like, defected. So I think they came over to the US.
It just made this intense change where it went from healthy adult women to these very young, like,
children, essentially. Yeah.
Children who have the weight of the nation on them and then are also abused. Like, literally, the training environment is one of, like, talking negatively to them, verbal abuse, encouraging eating disorders. Like the idea that you would have to be a physical athlete, but then you're also encouraged not to eat is right. just so incredibly, like, it just doesn't compute for me.
I didn't realize that Simone Biles is also 4'8". Did you know that?
Yeah. Well, apparently, like, the shorter you are, essentially, the better as a gymnast right. because you can do more flips in the air.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Okay, that I just don't was, mean like, to a brag. Stalking, like, number to me. Yeah.
I don't mean to brag, but I can do a round off. Can you do a round off?
I cannot do a round off.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's a skill saved for the few, for the elite, if you will. And one of the things that...
I've never actually, I haven't seen you do a round off in a very long time. So I'd like to, you know, to make sure that's still up to date.
I can do a repeat. Absolutely. It's no problem. I'll do it for the Instagram at some point. Maybe in Europe. Who knows? It depends how turn I get. Anyway, I remember like my gymnastics days a tiny, tiny bit. And like, so basically what's going on with some, and I'm going to come back to that. But what's going on with Simone Biles now is everyone, you know, if you're not following the story, essentially, she's the premier athlete, the top athlete by a huge margin. Like, she's the best we've seen in I think 54 mm-hmm. years. She was up for this Olympics getting the all-around title, like, I guess being the best in every category for the second or third time. She's, like, phenomenal, once-in-a-century athlete, incredible. And her performance has kind of started to deteriorate in the finals and leading right. up to the events. And she'd had a few missteps. And then finally in the finals for Tokyo, she like stepped off the mat, which is like, or she fell, did she fell off the beam or step off the mat? I think she stepped off the mat in the finals.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember.
It was a foot off the spot. And anyway, this oh my gosh, anyone who's like familiar with gymnastics is just like
stabbing themselves. Let's make sure we have that right really quick. I'll just look it up really quick.
Okay, Chandler's going to fact check. So basically, she also simplified in air the move she was going to do. So she was going to do some like very complex thing, and then in midair she changed what she was going to do and simplified it. And one of the things they said is basically like, sometimes gymnasts, they get what are called the twisties, which is you basically stop being able to fully have control and awareness of where your body is in space. And I remember like doing gymnastics and like doing back handsprings and doing that stuff. And I don't want to compare my extremely juvenile, like kindergarten level gymnastics to Simone Biles. But I think we all instinctively understand that your body, when it's doing like these extremely fast movements, mm-hmm. it has to be completely in sync with your mind. And right. there's no moment where you can second guess. Like your mind and your body have to be working completely yep. in fluid motion, and you have to be 100% confident. And the second you second guess, that's when there can be huge problems. Right. And so anyway, she pulled out.
It's a level of precision that just requires that type of mind body, you know, synchness.
Mastery.
If you will. Yeah.
Yeah. Not even mastery. You're right. It's like being in sync. Mm-hmm. And the second you feel out of sync, that's when your life is literally in danger because of the very high stakes physical danger of the sport. Anyway, everyone's talking about how great it is that she, you know, pulled out due to her mental health. And I totally agree. Like on this podcast, work soft. I think you and I are totally against the mentality that you just have to go hard, be number one.
This isn't right. This isn't even working soft. This is just saying no to, you know, to pushing yourself beyond what you're capable of. And she's already proven what she's capable of. And it's far more than anyone else. I love all the memes of just like, you know, for lack of, you know, I'm going to be a little rude right now, but just like white guys, like sitting at home being like, oh, I can't believe she pulled out of the finals. Like, you know, gymnasts are supposed to be like just saying all that stuff. And
I know I saw a tweet of someone who was like, oh, so you're telling me that you don't want to do it because you don't feel good. It was like so horrible.
Yeah. Even though she's like one of the most awarded gymnastics Olympians like of all time. Like, okay.
Right. Right. Which is, and to that point, I'm not saying that Simone Biles in any way has worked soft or has adopted our right. work soft mentality. I'm just saying there's a spirit there of knowing your limits as a human being.
Which is why I might add that working soft is a great mentality, because it is all about, like you say, knowing your limits and not pushing yourself farther than you can, you know, honestly go. And I think that's extremely healthy. I think you and I are championing mental health with our work soft mentality.
Here's the thing. In life, unless you're going to be an Olympian, 20% effort yields 80% of the results. That's really what it is. But you have to put forth 80% to 100% effort to yield that top score. And most of the time, it's not even necessary.
I completely agree. And I just think it's amazing and it's commendable. And I don't think we should be pushing people to do that crazy of things. And people should be listening to their bodies and to their minds. And there should just be more normalization around it, because she's done enough, everybody. Okay. You've seen enough.
Yeah. And like, of course it's a mental health thing, but it's also it's a physical health thing. It's like, knowing, hey, and I honestly do that all the time. Like, I'll be like, oh, sorry, I'm not going to do some crazy sport or some, like, I'm not
even asked to do crazy sports. Let's just fact check that.
I feel
no
like
one's asking you to be on the soccer team, okay?
I feel like I opt out of dangerous situations daily.
Right.
Maybe that's totally an illusion. It's about having the confidence in yourself and valuing yourself over being a sacrificial lamb for other people.
I completely agree. I'm so glad, Lauren, that you're saying no to dangerous situations every single day. I'm so proud of you. Your bravery is amazing.
A little bit of an exaggeration. No,
I loved it. I'm here for it. I also say no to dangerous situations all the time. I just want to add that the documentary is really great. It doesn't actually really focus that much on Simone. I do think it was really, I read something about how it was really important for her to even participate in the 2021 Olympics, because just to put pressure on USA Gymnastics to do better and to, you know, make reparations for the past, which I think is just super powerful. Like, she's made this incredible, like, this huge statement. And I didn't honestly understand that she was one of Larry Nassar's victims until the documentary. I didn't know that for some reason.
I didn't know it either. Honestly, I didn't know who she was until like a week ago, until all this stuff came out.
Yeah, we're not so sporty. We're not sporty people. I knew it because I feel like I've done advertising stuff around her, and she's like a person in like that world that she's like a, you know, a sponsor or whatever. But yeah, she's incredible. And anyway, so all that is to say, the documentary is really excellent. It's pretty dark. So like, you know, buckle up. It's not easy to watch, but it really makes you think. Like, at least it made me think that we need to rethink some of these institutions, because they just are filled with corrupt people who do not protect children at all.
Right. And I think one of the most arresting scenes of the whole documentary is when Carrie Strug, in the 1996 Olympics, she lands incorrectly and injures herself like pretty badly on her first try. And then her coach is like, go. And like, there's not even the choice, the option that she wouldn't do her second try, even though she's clearly injured. So she does her second try. She nails it. She wins the gold, but literally she lands basically on one foot and then is so hurt from this that she crawls away from like the floor. The mat, like, you watch this like child like just crawling from the mat, and you watch as everyone is so happy, and it's actually like so deranged, and it makes you like rethink, like I get that the Olympics are so great, you're watching like human excellence, people pushing the frontiers of what the human body can do, yada yada yada, but like also why, in terms of like, if it's costing you your body.
Exactly, why is the question.
It's like, literally, why?
Some people are just really passionate about their sports. Like, I don't know what passion is at all, but some people are just really passionate about it. And, you know, it is a beautiful thing to see people accomplish huge moments like that. But yet again, it also begs the question, why? At what cost?
Athletic achievements, I understand the objective value of them in a theoretical way. I understand the theory.
Sure.
In reality, though, I just think about, like,
I'm just like, never wanted anything that much ever.
Like, does it even matter if you can propel your body through a body of water, if you can surf a big wave, if you can do any of this shit? Like, really? If it's going to cost your physical health, if it's going to cost you hours of happiness and leisure.
Right.
If you're considering,
if you're going to have to wear a brace or go into a cast, no, absolutely not.
Absolutely not. You know what I've won the Olympics of, Chandler?
Not getting
being a lady
single
of leisure. not giving a single fuck, being a lady of leisure, enjoying my life, not caring what people think. These are other, there are other Olympics that I feel like we are not necessarily.
Unsung, unheroed, uncelebrated.
Unsung heroes. Totally.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you guys, if you're not an Olympic medalist, which I'm sure no one listening to this podcast is.
I would just
you frankly, are an Olympian in another way.
You are. I mean, I would like a gold medal for having a weak will to live. An exceptionally weak will to live.
For a gold medal for living in spite of your weak will.
Living and championing living and all. Moving forward and trying and getting a job. Yeah. Holding down that job.
Holding down that job, showing up every day. Mm-hmm. This is the thing. Like, everyday people like us, total commoners, just getting through the day is a feat that, if assessed correctly, should be judged as heroic.
I'm about to sing the national anthem.
Are you crying?
I'm crying.
Okay, great.
Wow. I've lit a torch here in Nantucket for you. I'm about to go run around the house with it.
Phenomenal, phenomenal. Well, now, Courtney is an Olympian of style. Let's put it, you know?
Yes. What's my accolade?
Being chic.
Olympian of...
You are an Olympian of truly of being like a great, wonderful friend who people Olympian just adore. Friendship. Oh, you're gosh, an Olympian of friendship.
I have the chills. I have the chills.
Right?
Are you expecting one?
I mean, I give myself so many accolades as I just move through my normal life. Let's leave it,
And you already can do a round off, so I feel like you don't need both. You don't need to have, you know.
Just get too many compliments as it is. Yeah. So let's just hold off there.
Okay.
Okay, today on the pod, you guys, we have my dear friend Sara. She is the founder of Casita de Luz, a direct-to-consumer fine jewelry brand based out of LA. Chandler, this was such a fun conversation.
She's amazing. I want all of her jewelry. Yes, I loved hearing all of her takes. And I don't know, it opened up my mind to the jewelry world in a way that hadn't before.
Yeah, she gives like all these cool behind-the-scenes info. Some of it like true hacks for how you can get great fine jewelry at a fraction of the price. So anyway, she's a wealth of knowledge. So it was super fun to chat with her about all the brands we love and what's worth it, what's not, like what's trending.
What to invest in, what not to.
It was a really fun conversation. So I hope you all love it. And we will see you either next week or on Friday if you're a Patreonie. And if you're not on Patreon, look in the mirror and ask yourself what you're doing with your life.
Take a good hard look in the mirror. Ask yourself why you're not spending $8 a month to hear more of us.
Or $4.99 to keep the pod alive.
Right.
$4.99. Let me just say.
Yeah, to just say you're on the Patreon, but you don't have to listen.
The people who, the benevolent souls who are just paying monthly just to show their support, they're like, I've heard enough, but I think these girls could use $5.
Right.
Those are Olympians in their own ways as well. Mm-hmm. Olympians of compassion.
Generosity.
And charity.
And friendship.
Okay.
Okay.
Love you, sis.
Love you.
Enjoy the interview, guys.
Bye.
Well, well, well. We are joined today by one of, seriously, my BFFs in Puerto Rico. I was so thrilled to discover that Sara is here, or that Sara is frequently here. We are joined by Sara Vafi.
I'm just honestly so thrilled that Lauren has friends. I didn't know that Lauren had any friends. I thought that the people I went on this boat day with were hired actors. So, true. I mean, maybe you are a hired actor. But, you know, I'm just, if you're real, I'm really thrilled that Lauren has some friends.
Lauren is very good at organizing boats. That is her one of her strong suits. So
yes.
Don't underestimate her.
I will literally do anything. I will do anything for a boat day.
Like, for a boat day.
I'm such a whore for a boat day. That's honestly, it's so embarrassing.
Love it.
Anyways, Sara is the founder of Casita de Luz, a direct-to-consumer fine jewelry brand based in Los Angeles. Sara, thank you so much for coming on the pod, and thank you so much for being my friend. As Chandler said, I don't have many.
Oh my God, I would love to be your, I mean, I love being your friend, and I'm so excited to be on the podcast with you guys. This is my first time on a podcast, so I don't really, I'm a little nervous to be honest, but the two of you are very welcoming and I'm excited.
Oh, good. Thank you so much. Well, we're so happy to have you. Sara, we were initially connected because I feel like we liked a lot of the same brands. Like we were kind of like following similar brands and kind of had similar taste in certain things when it came to clothes and jewelry. So I'd love to know first, you before you started, or did you start Casita de Luz while you were still working at Outdoor Voices?
I launched it as something else when I was at OV. I just like started an Instagram. It had a different name. I just like started selling stuff on Instagram because people kept asking me like, where'd you get this? Where'd you get that? And I'm like, I don't want to reveal my sources because I spent a lot of time in downtown LA in college and after college. I would literally spend all my internship money and make myself jewelry. I mean, the real reason I got into jewelry was because my mom, gave me and my sister a lot of her passed down jewelry that my grandma bought for her. So it kind of just sparked this interest in something that's so beautiful that'll last forever. And I feel like it's super timeless most of the time. Mm-hmm. So I was always drawn to like purchasing jewelry over other accessories like purses or shoes or sunglasses, which I can't say now because I love to buy all those things now. but that's what initially drew my interest. And the stuff that my mom gave me, it's crazy that she was given to, it was given to her like when she was like, I don't know, 16, and it's lasted this long and I still wear it mm-hmm. to this day. Mm-hmm. I've always been interested in jewelry. I took entrepreneurship classes in college. I spent all my internship money on making things. I learned a lot of lessons. Like I met different manufacturers who sometimes they were like, no, you need a 5-piece minimum or like a certain dollar amount minimum. Like I won't make you this. Or I found people who would make me something just like one off. So I started making myself stuff in college, and then naturally my sister and my mom wanted it also. So I would make it for them. And then other people started asking me, and I would just kind of do it like one off. It was always in the back of my mind, but I pursued like the normal expectation after college is like getting a full-time job 9 to 5. And I would still make jewelry when I lived, by downtown LA, I would spend so much time there. It was kind of dangerous with how much money I would spend on jewelry. And I still wear a lot of the stuff that I made, what was it, in 2016. So jewelry is super timeless. But I digress. So going back to Casita de Luz. So I launched an Instagram because so many people were asking me because at Outdoor Voices, I would manage events. So I'd be wearing my jewelry with the workout clothes. And then people I met at these events would just like constantly ask me like, where'd you get that? Like, where can I get this? And then it got to the point where I was like, okay, maybe I should just make an Instagram. And that way people can like message me or ask me on there. So I did that and I didn't know what I was doing. Cause I was like, do I want to do it where I have one item and like once someone buys it, that's it? Or do I want to have like a consistent stock? So I was just like kind of playing around with it. And then fast forward to like the pandemic, I was unemployed for a bit and I was like, okay, I should do this full time while I look for a job. Cause I didn't know what I was doing. Last year was such a blur. So I like got all my business affairs. I like opened, like I did all the everything by the book. And then I decided to change the name to Casita de Luz. I don't know how I came up with this name. I think I wanted to do a Spanish name because I just love speaking Spanish. And I just think I love the word casita. I just think like little house is just, it's just a cute name. I don't know. And Luz is light. So like every time you're wearing jewelry, you're kind of like shining in the light. It's kind of dumb, but it works.
I love
and
that.
It was an open name.
I love it.
So I did that and I just launched an Instagram. So I was just selling on Instagram for a while, which was very interesting. I didn't know people actually bought off Instagram, but I did it.
Right.
And then it was getting to the point where I was like, okay, I don't want to be on my phone all day. I have to start a website. So I started building a website, and then I was doing some research, and I was like, why don't I just open an Etsy page before I launch a website just to test the market? And it was actually one of the best decisions I've ever made, because first of all, you gain all of Etsy's audience, because there's like people out there who only shop on Etsy. I didn't know this, but this is a thing. And then jewelry is very prevalent on Etsy, whether it's real gold or fake gold or artisan, like craft made jewelry. It's just very popular. And then third, I can see what sells and what doesn't sell. And there's like no overhead cost of like making my website. I just want, honestly, it was just like, it's been a constant test, seeing what works and doesn't work and what fails and what has been successful. And Etsy's interface is actually incredible. Like their seller interface is very straightforward, very helpful. I think that it was one of the best decisions I've made, but I do want to still make a website. That's like on my trajectory.
Yeah. Well, I think it's funny. I actually have a friend who started a business, you know, a little bit before the pandemic hit.
Yes. But
a similar experience on Etsy, where like they started the Etsy shop, and then the Etsy shop was like the main revenue driver beyond their website. Like, because
really,
like, there's just so many users in that ecosystem. So like tapping into people that are already there is super powerful.
It's been such a great learning process. I think the next thing I really want, and I've been like saving up for, is better product photography. It's really like you're selling a product through a photo, and I don't have the best photos. I will admit to that. So that's like next on my list. I think that's even before a website. I don't know. But Etsy is a great place if you want to start a jewelry brand to test the market. That is my biggest advice to anyone who like wants to sell jewelry.
So when I first met you, I noticed your jewelry right away, and you definitely have like a very distinct, really beautiful style. And honestly, you like got me, I feel like you got me into jewelry. Like I kind of like,
I have that effect on people, and a lot of boyfriends are not happy about it.
Truly like seeing Sara and all of your jewelry, like it fully was like, oh my gosh, I want to look just as fabulously adorned. There's really no other way of putting it. So it's so funny. And I was talking with Chandler on our Patreon last week, and we were talking about like things we want to buy coming up. And I feel like when it comes to like buying like more higher end pieces, you should start with jewelry, because A, you wear it every day, and B, it's not like a handbag or a pair of great shoes that's going to eventually wear and tear. Like most fine jewelry, like you said, you can give it to your grandchildren someday, which is just like, there really is no better investment.
Totally. And honestly, most jewelry is repairable. So like, let's say a diamond pops out, or like you bend your ring, like they're all, it's totally easy to fix those things. And I think a lot of people don't know that. And I think a lot of issues with jewelry is people are just not educated.
Right. So that's really what we wanted to chat about with you on the pod, because I feel like it's all a mystery to me. Like I'm looking at like jewelry online, and really I have no idea what's a good price and what is just like a really well-branded brand, essentially with good photographs. Like it's so funny. I was looking at an Anita Co necklace this morning, and it's so pretty. It's lariat beautiful. Necklace. I'm not sure if it's that's how you pronounce it, but I think it's
a lariat. Lariat, same thing. Yeah.
Well, okay, I'm going to send you a link right now, actually. But anyway, it's like a slim gold chain, and then it has a emerald diamond and a marquee diamond. One is – or a baguette diamond. One's a quarter of a carat. One's a third of a carat. So these are small diamonds. And then the gold chain is extremely thin, and it's $5,700. And I just like know instinctually that this is like a crazy markup. However, maybe I'm wrong. So I'm like so curious, like what brands you think actually sell at like really good prices? Like how do we determine what's a good price? I'm sending you this link right now. We just need like you to guide us through this.
So I think, you know how you mentioned like, oh, I was wearing jewelry and it made you want to wear jewelry. I think what makes this will all tie together. What makes jewelry so fun is that it can really, you can like really bring out your personality with jewelry. Like everyone shops at Zara, everyone shops at Mango, like wherever, like these like direct to consumer fast fashion brands. But the best way to like really show your personality, I think, is through jewelry, whether that's fine jewelry or costume jewelry. So that's what drew me to it. And then the best thing about jewelry, like I would love people to come shop everything I sell, but I think the best part about jewelry is mixing from different brands. That's how you really make your collection unique and different. Like buying everything from Mejuri is not fun, but like buying one thing from Mejuri is fun. And then one thing from Vry is really fun. Just like mixing it up is what makes your collection unique, and like mixing and matching stuff. So that's what's great. And the jewelry market is extremely saturated. Like no one's really reinventing the wheel. Like, let's be honest, like you can find a similar pair of earrings across multiple brands. They'll just tweak it in a minor way. So it's like their own, but truly like everything's the same. Like if you really look at everything, you're like, oh, this is really similar to this. This is really similar to that. So like, I'm not reinventing the wheel and I'm very aware of that. So I think what I excel at is styling it and putting it together where it makes people want to buy it. So I think that is a big part of jewelry brands and what makes things worth it or not worth it.
So, but as you're shopping across these various brands, you know, you obviously want to make sure you're getting a good deal and you're paying an appropriate price. So like, I'm super curious if you find this link I sent you, you know, like if you're looking at the materials, it's a beautiful necklace.
So this is
appropriately
people.
Priced?
It's appropriately priced for her market. So that's the thing, is like each brand has their own audience and their own market. Like I can't afford this $5,700 necklace, but there's definitely someone out there who can. Like there's another brand called Shea Jewelry. They make beautiful stuff. If you want to look it up, it's also in the higher price range, but you know, there's, it's for their audience. Like their audience can afford this stuff. And I'm assuming they're using like high quality diamonds with good cut, good clarity. Anita's using 18 carat, and 14 carat gold is the standard in the US. So she's using a higher carat already. So 14 carat is standard in the US. I think like in parts of Europe, 9 carat is standard. And then in the US, I think 10 carat is also acceptable. In like the Middle East, it's like 18 carat and above. So it just really depends. So that's one thing people don't know, is they don't understand like the difference in carats. These people are running a business, you know, like they have to meet margins, and clearly they're marketing to an audience that they know will pay for this. I personally wouldn't pay this much for this necklace or these rings listed on these websites. So when I'm looking at jewelry, I'm seeing what it's made of. Is it made with diamonds, or is it made with like, a lot of times they use like champagne diamonds, which are like, because the pave diamonds are so small, you can't really see the cut or the clarity. So they'll just use champagne diamonds, which are actually lower quality and they don't sparkle as much over time. So you just have to read the descriptions.
So obviously Shino, like this company, they understand their market. They're marketing towards people who are spending, you know, in the thousands / tens of thousands on jewelry, which absolutely that market is big and exists. But like for the raw materials, if this was on Mejuri, which is targeted towards, you know, a younger demographic, or not necessarily even younger, definitely younger, a demographic that isn't spending that much, I think,
Like the I mean,
it would be a
raw
fraction of the cost.
Right. And it's the same necklace.
Yeah, but that's what I'm telling you is like no one's reinventing the wheel. Like you could take this to your jeweler who made your engagement ring and be like, make me this. And he can. That's the crazy
and
thing.
And he can for a fraction of the cost.
Totally. But people don't have jewelers. People don't know these things. So it's just like they don't know. So that's education is like the biggest part of it.
I mean, that's what I did with my engagement ring, actually, is I went to Marc Brumond and I found what I wanted. And then I took it to a jeweler. I took the photos to a jeweler and had them remake it. And they set my engagement ring for a fraction of the cost that Marc Brumond was selling it.
Because you're going directly to the source. Like,
right.
The other brand is going to use a jeweler to make that ring and they have to pay the jeweler and then they have to meet their margin and then...
Right.
Like they have more things to meet. Whereas if you go straight to the jeweler, you are getting a better price.
Right. Okay. That's I think such a golden tip that people don't realize. Yeah. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Of course. But the other issue is like people don't know jewelers. Like how did you find your jeweler?
I think I was just looking up like engagement ring companies and brands and
got it
and jewelers essentially.
Yeah. So you can really find a jeweler anywhere and they could truly make you things at a fraction of the cost. But I know that's for like solid gold. I don't really know much about like gold plated costume jewelry and how those things work. Like a lot of jewelers aren't skilled in gold plating. Like that's its own thing. So I don't right. know much about that. And then like gold vermeil is its own thing also.
Well, and okay. So that's my next question is when it comes to gold plated and gold vermeil, I don't have any pieces that are like that because I've always been afraid that they would just wear really poorly and maybe look cheap in person. So what is your opinion of gold vermeil and gold plated?
So I don't have much plated jewelry. I do have some plated jewelry, like costume jewelry that I'll wear on like a special occasion or with like a specific outfit, but it wouldn't be something I would necessarily wear every day. That's a personal preference because I have super sensitive skin. So sometimes plated stuff, whatever it's mixed with, it can irritate my skin, especially like rings or bracelets or even necklaces. And I learned that at a young age. And even earrings, I can't really wear, like I'll wear costume jewelry earrings for like a dinner out or like a wedding or something that's like, you know, it would be so expensive if it was real gold, but it's just for a night or an evening or a day or whatever.
Right.
And my ears do hurt at the end of the day. So I'm just sensitive to it. But then there's people who like the pH of their skin, it doesn't tarnish or do anything to gold plated jewelry or vermeil. So it's like really a chemistry thing. It's kind of insane.
Interesting.
Yeah. I have a lot of friends who wear gold filled or gold filled is better than gold plated. So if you had to pick between the two, go with gold filled. And then if you had to even go better than that, it's vermeil. So that's kind of the order it goes in is plated is the worst, then filled is the best, and then vermeil is it's like a thicker layer of gold, so it's way more durable.
Gotcha. So here's my like novice question. Okay. If I'm, you know, if I'm not buying a pair of hoops from H&M, but I'm going to, you know, level up a little bit and buy them from like Mejuri or somewhere like that, like is that gold plated or is that vermeil? Like, I don't know. Because those don't really tarnish as well.
So,
but they're like, Mejuri, I know they're not as expensive as it can be. Sorry.
No, you're good. Mejuri, I think you can shop by material. So like you can get 14 karat gold hoops or you can get gold vermeil or you could do sterling silver. I don't even think they offer plated stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, they only do solid gold, silver, titanium for men or women. I wouldn't recommend going and buying jewelry from like H&M or like other stores because it's just, you know, it's fast fashion. And I just think that stuff it'll just tarnish, like if you sweat or it's just like you right. get it wet, I mean, it's like gone.
Yeah, the other day I like lost a pair of hoops and I was like going out for a day with my friends, so I just like quickly ducked into H&M to buy some. And even the gold, like I had like a hoop from Gorgiana or somewhere that like and was in one of my piercings, and like the gold is so bad looking and so poor, like it didn't yeah. even match. So just yeah, even from like an aesthetic viewpoint, it's just not that great.
No, and gold hoops, I think, are something that every girl should invest in. They literally don't never go out of style, ever.
Yeah.
Ever. Yeah. Right. It's crazy. Like, they never, ever go out of style.
Well, okay, this is a funny story. Chandler was talking with her roommates, and they were kind of, like, talking about potential engagement rings mm-hmm. that they mm-hmm. would want. Chandler, do you want to yes. tell the story?
Yeah, so we were just, like, chatting about engagement rings, chatting about our like styles or what we would want.
Fun.
And we, yeah, super fun, you know, gal talk. And we, it was just like the most polarizing debate because they were like, I mean, I said I would like a gold engagement ring. Okay. And they were like, absolutely not. Like, you need a platinum gold. You need like, no. And I was like, I don't really want, like, I called it silver for lack of a better term. I know it's technically platinum. But I was like, no, like I feel like gold is a timeless color.
Like yellow gold.
Yellow gold. Yellow gold is like a timeless color because I do feel like gold hoops and things like that never go out of style. But what's funny is that our mom actually got a yellow gold engagement ring and then she got it like dipped in like platinum gold.
Really?
Because she thought it like gold went out of style. But I would love to hear your viewpoint on like, do you feel like people want more platinum gold engagement rings or yellow gold ones? Or like just... you know, that type of jewelry.
Or just jewelry in general.
Yeah.
So I think yellow gold is having its moment. I think maybe white gold used to be more prevalent mm-hmm. and more sought after. But yellow gold, I think it picked back up because I think, quote me if, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure yellow gold, became more popular because of Carrie Bradshaw's yellow gold necklace in Sex and the City.
Oh, I'm pretty sure. I don't know that. Okay. Oh, I love Sex and the City, but I didn't realize that. That's amazing.
She wears that gold necklace that says Carrie. I don't think she's wearing it in the beginning.
Yes. No, I love that necklace. I even got one that says Chan like forever ago.
I really think she revived. I think she revived yellow gold.
Yeah, I totally buy that.
So... platinum is an interesting metal. Platinum used to be very popular in the 80s. The issue I have with platinum is that it's very soft, so it can bend easily. So if you're the type of gal who wants to wear your jewelry like 24/7, workouts, swimming, like grocery shopping, yoga, like whatever, platinum is like a, I don't know, it's kind of like, it's really preference. I wouldn't pick it because it's just a softer metal. I would, if you had to go with that look, I would do white gold.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you could do 14 karat white gold or 18 karat white gold. And the higher karat you go, the richer the color it is. So 10 karat hoops look pretty similar to 14 karat hoops, but if you were to put like 18 karat hoops next to 14 karat hoops, you could definitely see the difference in the color.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
That's so, a piece. Sometimes I feel like I see yellow gold and it looks so like yellow, like not in a good way. And then there's, and then obviously also yellow gold and it looks golden and rich and like warm and pretty. And I'm so curious, maybe what I'm referring to is just like really poor quality and not even real gold. I don't know. But is it basically like just the higher the carat, the better and richer the color?
Yeah. But sometimes I know what you're talking about when it looks like uber yellow, like super
like almost greenish.
Yeah. So 14 karat yellow gold, it's a mixture of pure gold, copper, and nickel. So I think it's really just the composition of how that piece of jewelry was made, whether they're using like a lot more of one element than the other. But 18 karat gold shouldn't look like that gross yellow gold color. It's actually a really beautiful, I think 18 karat gold is an incredible color of gold. And I think if you go higher, it gets a little too yellowy.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And then 10 karat honestly, I can't really tell the difference between 10 karat and 14 karat gold. So if there's someone out there on your pod who's trying to decide to buy 10 karat or 14 karat hoops, just go with the 10 karat. They're cheaper and no one will ever know, and they won't irritate you or tarnish or change color.
So funny. I just never knew the difference between all three. Like I never knew the difference between 14 and 18 and 10. So this is super valuable.
I thought like the word carat was just like in relation to diamond size before like 10 minutes ago.
So carat with a K is for the gold, and then carat with a C is like how the size of a diamond or a stone.
I didn't even know there was two different spellings. Okay, move.
I'm like just they'll learning say like so it'll much. Say like 2 CT, like 2 carat, and then they'll say 14 carat, like with a K, gold.
Okay, wow.
But yeah, it's super interesting. I think 10 carat is total. I have some 10 carat jewelry, and I honestly love it. So I mix it in with all my other 14 carat and 18 carat gold.
Okay, so when you're shopping though, like across these websites, give us your top line thoughts on like the most popular millennial targeted, you know, direct to consumer fine jewelry brands. Like, which ones do you love? Which ones do you think are a little overpriced? Because I'm just gonna preempt this. I did get like a bunch of rings at Christmas time from Majuri.
Amazing.
And I showed them to my sisters and they all said they looked super cheap, which like I was disappointed about. But I even got this like this snake one and it was hollowed out inside and it just felt cheap on my finger. Like it just didn't feel nice. So I'm curious as to your thoughts on like on these different brands. Maybe I'm just like choosing from the least priced amongst their inventory and need to choose higher quality, but just curious what you think.
So what was the material? Was it vermeil? Was it gold filled? Was it solid gold?
Okay, let me look. I'd have to look up my order, which I can do, but I don't remember off the top of my head. But I know for a fact it was all real. Like it was all... Let's see.
You could wear it 24/7.
Yeah, totally. I thought they only sold though like real stuff you could wear 24/7.
No, so if you go on their website, you could shop by material. So you'll see like silver, vermeil, recycled gold, yellow gold. So I think that's what people don't realize is that you need to pay attention with what it's made. Like the first thing I do if I see a piece of jewelry I like is literally go drop down on the details and see what it's made of or materials.
Right.
That's immediately the first thing I do. And if it's not good quality, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to buy this. Unless it's like super costumey and I want to wear it for like a wedding or a special event that I'm literally going to wear it for like 5 hours, you know? Like, right, I have a couple cool cocktail rings that I got from, like, random boutiques, like, if I was traveling that I wear for special occasions. But because I'm not, like, wearing them every day, they're totally fine. So if I was looking at brands, like, Majuri is a great brand. I mean, they're doing an incredible job. They exploded. I mean, they have storefronts. Like, they were based in Canada, and now they're all over. Like, it's kind of crazy, and they have this crazy marketing power and they take great, great product photography, and their gifting program is also insane. Like they have so much UGC. It's kind of wild. Most of the UGC is their cheaper stuff that they gift. Just a fun fact, like they'll gift a lot of vermeil and silver over solid gold, but they do gift solid gold. So like they'll tag what an influencer is wearing, and then I'll click into it and it's like a vermeil ring. And I'm like, I don't really want to buy a vermeil ring. Like I'd rather spend a little bit more and get a solid gold ring.
Well, I think what's tricky is like, okay, so I just looked at my order and everything I got was solid gold. But like for example, the snake ring I got, it was hollowed out on the inside. So I could feel like it was almost like it felt kind of sharp on my finger because I could feel where like the – I don't know if this makes sense, but like it was kind of like sharp where they had hollowed it out on each side.
Yeah.
And so, And so I guess, I don't know. I guess I don't really know where I'm going with this.
It's hollow to keep the price down, because if that was solid, it would be way more expensive, because they're pricing it based off of the weight of gold that's used. That's part of the...
Gotcha.
That's part of like the pricing formula, is like the weight, how much gold you're using. Are you using stones? The labor, the design, the CAD, like everything. There's all these steps. Honestly, getting a rendering or like a 3D wax or mold of the jewelry is so much more expensive. Like, I had this necklace made. I purchased this necklace a long time ago. I honestly don't remember where I got it from. It was like this, I sell it on my shop right now, but the original one I had, I purchased, and I tried to find it again, and none of my wholesale vendors had it. So I took it to my jeweler, who I've been working with him forever, like for over 5-6 years. He's like my go-to guy. I trust him like completely. He's like an old man. I love him. we're like on a texting basis. Like, I'll text him all the time. I pretty much annoy him. But I took it to him. So I was like, funny. Can you make me this necklace? Like, I want to sell it. And he was like, yeah, but you have to buy 10 of them in order to eat the cost of the mold that I have to make it. So like, that's what's really expensive. Yeah. So you have to sit on some inventory to get a mold, or else you end up paying a lot more for like that wax or the CAD or whatever. So that's like a really expensive part of jewelry, is if you want to make something custom, it gets expensive as like a, for me to sell.
As a consumer, then, it's probably not going to work to take just a picture of something and have your jeweler make it, because they create.
No. Someone could, but for me, he was just like, listen, like, you could buy 2 of these necklaces and see how they sell, but you're also going to have to pay me for this wax the mold I have to make. But if you buy more, it'll cover the cost of that piece also. But no, gotcha. any jeweler can make it. I mean, that'll go into their pricing model. If I'm like, hey, I want this special necklace made, like, can you make it? And a lot of times they don't need like a mold for it, because like that Anita Co necklace you sent me, like, that's a chain, which you don't need a mold for. Like, they'll be able to source a chain. It's a baguette diamond. I can't see what the lower diamond is.
It's a marquee
diamond. So like, they have all those materials on hand, so they wouldn't really need a mold for something like that. But then something specific and unique, like, they have to make the mold for it.
Right. And you have, like, that's one of the things I noticed on your brand, is you have very distinctive, unique jewelry that I haven't seen on these sites like Mejuri or Vrai. And I think, like, especially the emerald snake earrings I bought from you, like, I haven't seen those anywhere, and I think they're so beautiful. So I think, I don't know, I know you say that, like, you know, you're not reinventing the wheel, but I do think you have like a very distinctive aesthetic that's really pretty, fine jewelry, and youthful, which I love.
Thank you. I'm trying to like really hone in on that niche, is like just kind of picking what I like and hoping people like it too. But I do, I mean, all these brands are doing such an incredible job. It's such a saturated market. I mean, it's really tough. And I do love a lot of other brands, and I do shop other brands, because I think that's like the whole fun part about building a jewelry collection, is shopping different brands and then just like either keeping it, or honestly, I've melted down old jewelry before and used it to make something new. Like, you could do that, or you could keep it and give it to future children or people you want to pass it down to. Or you just don't look at it for a while, and then like 6 months later, you're like, oh, I forgot I had this ring. I love it. So it's all just part of the process of like building a collection. And there's a couple things that like every girl should have in her collection, which is like gold hoops, I think, are really standard. Everyone needs a pair of gold hoops, a necklace that you would kind of want to wear every day and never take off. which I think you have one. I think you were wearing it last time I saw you. Super cute. The little diamond one.
Oh, thank you.
And then this might be like my own thing, but I love pinky rings. I think they're so underrated. So underrated.
Okay.
And I know it sounds ridiculous, but like right now I'm wearing 3 pinky rings on one pinky and 2 on the other. And that's it.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
So funny. Oh my gosh, I'm dying to see what they are.
I think pinky rings are super underrated. Honestly, they're very comfortable to wear. Like they don't really move because like your pinky is pretty important finger, but it's not the most important.
Right.
They look great next to engagement rings. Like it's just, they're so fun. And like the easiest pinky ring to get is like a little solid gold band or a diamond, little diamond half band. Or you could get like a signet ring, which I think those are super fun to wear. So those are my 3 things I love. And then I'm sure you notice I'm always wearing gold bracelets. We grew up in the era that like every cool girl had like a Cartier bracelet and a love bracelet. I could not afford those. So I think it's way more fun to like build a bracelet stack of like solid gold bracelets that you just never take off.
I'm obsessed with the Cartier nail bracelet.
Oh, that's never cool. I would buy that too. I would buy that too. I would definitely get that over the love bracelet.
Because that's like if you know type of thing. Like, because it doesn't have that insignia. And it's so dope looking and so unique, I think.
They also make a nail ring. They make a ring version of it too.
They do?
They do.
It's probably still really like $10,000.
No, I don't. Oh my gosh. Think it's that crazy. Hold on. Cartier. I think it's – I mean, it is expensive. You're looking at like $1,000.
Okay, well, this is the problem with you, Sara, is that you are
– I'm an enabler.
You are. It's so bad. It's so bad. When I first met you, I was just like so minimal. Like every piece of jewelry I had, Kagan bought me for a special occasion. I don't even buy it for myself. And now I'm just like – oh my gosh.
Well, you have an item I don't have and I really want, which is a tennis bracelet.
Oh my gosh. You got to get one. It's really, I'm like addicted. I bought another one too. And it's another bad financial.
Do you wear the same one that your sister wears, Courtney?
Yeah. I have the bouncing diamond tennis bracelet from Diamond Au Pair. And that is like the most special or distinctive one I have. And then I just got like a more standard one that kind of sits next to it. Cause I like the like straight line with the like,
God, look at you building your bracelet stack. I love it. See, it's unique to you. That's the whole fun part. And like, I'm assuming you got the other tennis bracelet from another brand, right?
Yeah, I did.
So that's the whole fun part about jewelry shopping is just like, buying one thing from one brand and then like another from another and then just like putting it together. It just looks really good.
Right. Totally. Okay. So Chandler had to go. She had to, you know, head off to work for corporate America for big tech, but I still have you here with me because I just want to get into what you're super excited about that's in your inventory right now that you're loving. And I just want to chat more about Casita de Luz.
Amazing. On my Instagram, I posted a poll story like a while back asking what people were interested in seeing. And a lot of people, like my prices aren't crazy. I mean, they are, I do sell some expensive things. A lot of people wanted some fun, lower priced items. So I worked with a vendor in Europe, and I made these fun, colorful beaded flower necklaces. I think they're my take on the childhood necklace trend that's coming to fruition. I don't really know if you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I totally do. Yes.
Chunky beads and stuff. It's super popular right now, but not completely my taste, but I appreciate it and I admire it. So that's kind of my take on something fun for the summer and something that like is an easy gift to give. So They come in a bunch of different colors. They're handmade. I work with this store in Italy. They make them by hand, so it takes a while. And the clasp is a little tiny heart, so it's super cute in case it like kind of turns on your neck. It's not an ugly clasp. So that's something fun, and I'm getting a bunch of new colors in stock within the next week. Something else that I'm super excited about. Let me look. I
just have to say before you get into the next thing, I just have to say the flower necklace is so cute. I'm dying to get the white one. I think that's my favorite. And because I would just wear so much white.
Yeah.
That's my vibe. I wish it was more gold. Please go with the white with the yellow or just the salt. I think the white with the yellow is like my favorite. So cute. And I'm also obsessed with everything that you have with butterflies. I think your butterfly earrings are so cute. Your butterfly necklace.
Oh, thank you.
I love everything.
I just got a new butterfly in stock that's a diamond butterfly. I actually think you would really like this. I'll send you a photo. I haven't. So the issue is I have a lot of new stuff. I just haven't had the time to shoot it and like put it on my Etsy page. So, and I was trying to find, I have like photographer friends who like love to do this stuff to build their portfolio. So it's just been like a logistical planning thing. But I think, I love the flower necklaces. I sell these turquoise huggies on my site that I also love. Obviously the
are those the ones with like the hanging diamonds?
No, these ones are just like classic turquoise stone huggies, but I do want to make the one that I know which one you're referring to. It's like a turquoise stud with a chain of diamonds that's hanging from it. So I made that for myself and I get so many requests. I'm just trying to figure out how to make it at a lower cost because I want it to look really good, but it's very expensive. Right. So it's been a little bit of a logistical challenge, but I'm learning. I love that. And then I have these.
Yeah, that one's definitely been on my list. It's so cute.
I have these snake earrings with ruby eyes, which are really fun and different.
Mm-hmm.
And what else? Let's see.
I love the snake earrings, obviously, I bought them. It's so funny. I thought about them every day for like 3 months. And then I was just
so
like.
So funny.
I texted you and you're like, okay, let's do it. And I'm just like, I'm doing it. I'm buying it.
Yeah, and now so you excited. Wear them all the time.
I wear them every day, totally.
One of my best sellers, surprisingly, is this baguette cut sapphire and diamond huggy hoop. I sell so many of them. People love sapphires, which is, I thought people like emeralds. I think emeralds are more in trend right now than sapphires, but those ones are super popular. They look amazing on like a second or third piercing. I'm currently wearing mine on my second piercings.
Okay.
And then I have a bunch of new pearl jewelry coming out. So I created these like pearl charms that you can add to any hoop pretty much of any size. So those will be coming out soon. And then I just actually made some men's stuff, which was really fun and different for me to make. Yeah, I made it with silver and white gold. One was a custom request that I got on Instagram, which it was super fun to like create this piece of jewelry for him. And then another one was just this brand that wanted, it was like a wholesale request. So I did that, but I think the snake earrings are my most popular item after the flower necklaces.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I sell a lot of those. People love them. I mean, they're classy, but they're edgy. Would you say, right?
Totally. Totally.
Like from afar, you're like, oh, she's wearing a diamond huggy. And then you kind of get closer to the person. You're like, it's a snake. How fun. So I think those are great. And then people love the beaded gold bracelets. They love to give them as gifts or just like it's super in right now. I use 10 karat gold beads, which people like the color. They are hollow. So I don't recommend them for people who are doing like crazy workouts like planks or boxing or anything because they're hollow and they can bend, but people love them, so I sell a lot of those. And honestly, this has just been like I've learned so much from selling like what sells and doesn't sell. I personally love Evil Eye jewelry, and I think it's very specific, so I have some Evil Eye bracelets on my site that people like, but it's not as popular. Wait, what is Evil Eye? Like a little Evil Eye is like, they call it like a Nazareth. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but it's like to ward off bad juju.
Oh,
like,
Evil Eye.
Like an Evil Eye. Yeah.
I heard that as one word, Evil Eye. And so I was confused. Okay, I get it now.
Talking a little fast.
No, it's good. Yeah, well, I think one of the benefits of your brand is that you're very like up on, like I feel like sometimes I'm always 2 years behind the trend, and maybe it's just like I'm just like I always wait that long before investing. And so what I like about shopping from your brand is I know that like everything's kind of at the forefront because you're like in this world, entrenched in it, and you have really good taste. So yeah. Everyone needs to check out Casita de Luz because such cute pieces.
The other thing I do a lot of is I get a lot of personal requests. So people like mm-hmm. a friend of a friend will be like, hey, my friend's looking for something like this. Can you source it or can you make it for her? So I do that a lot, like a lot. So if there's something you ever see and you like need feedback on it or like want someone to make it, like I do that pretty frequently. So I like did that the other week.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. So a lot of people, they'll send me inspo being like, I love this earring, but like obviously it's probably like what, like thousands of dollars, and I can try to find something similar at a better price point.
You are a treasure trove, pun intended, of knowledge and helping our listeners get great deals. Where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Casita de Luz Jewelry, or on Etsy. If you just type in Casita de Luz Jewelry, my shop will come up. I do want to extend a little special discount to all your followers. Any of your listeners can type in Pop Apologists on Etsy and they'll get a little discount added to their cart. Or if they want to like, I also have a business Venmo. So like a lot of times people Venmo me if they don't want to go through Etsy, which is actually, I highly recommend that to any small brand jewelry owner, is business Venmo is so clutch. They take less.
Wait, why? What's the difference? They take less.
So like Etsy charges me 8%. Venmo charges me about like 2% per transaction.
Gotcha.
So like anytime I get a friend of a friend or someone like who wants to buy jewelry that I personally know, or like, hey, can I introduce you to Sarah? Like I just send them my Venmo. It's way easier. Little trick.
You have given so many pro tips, so many gems of wisdom. Another corny pun intended. anything else you want to leave with our listeners before we sign off?
No, just build your jewelry collection, have fun with it. Make sure you read the description and the materials. Costume jewelry is still fine for like whatever occasion you want to wear it to, but it's worth the investment for getting fine jewelry.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for extending a discount to our listeners. That's truly so, so nice.
Of course.
So you guys check out Casita de Luz before you go down any other jewelry rabbit hole, because you do have limited stock. And anyway, I'm super excited to introduce our listeners to your brand. So thank you so much for coming on, Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me. I had so much fun.
That's all for now, folks. Don't forget, give us a 5-star review, hit us up on Instagram at Pop Apologists, and we will see you next week, live every Wednesday.